Welcome everyone to the American Carpet Podcast, where we discuss all things carp related in the USA. Featuring anglers' interviews, stories, and monthly competitions with traditional US and Euro anglers, fly anglers, and anyone who has a passion for this incredible fish, the carp, Cyprinus carpio. Much maligned and misunderstood, and undoubtedly one of the finest sport fish to be targeted here in the USA. This is where we, the guilty ones, can meet. My name is Sean Manning of the American Carp Society, and I'm grateful to be your host. Welcome, everybody. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast for the latest updates and visit AmericanCarpSociety.com for the latest info on what we're doing here at the American Carp Society. Well, today, this is a special edition of the podcast. We have not one, but two special guests. We're honored to have Dan Kubik, the president of Denver Trout Unlimited, and Reed Baker, who organizes the famous Carp Slam Fly Tournament that is held in the Denver South Platte River each year. So welcome to you both, gentlemen. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean. Happy to be here.
What we're going to do before we get into, this is the first time we've actually got a chance to speak on the phone, but before we get into the meat of what we're going to go through here today, I just wanted to ask you guys a little bit about your personal fishing history, if you wouldn't mind, how long you guys have been fly fishing, and also your how you got interested in carp in the first place. So if you want to take it away.
Sure. This is Dan. I'm relatively new to fly fishing. I didn't take it up until I was well into my adulthood and been fishing now for about, 10, 15 years.
Right.
Started fishing, fly fishing for trout. And then I live here in near downtown Denver. And there's a big river that flows right through the middle of Denver. And it's chock-a-block with carp. And so what better way to get my fishing fix on than being able to drive 10 minutes from my home and fly fish for carp. That's where I've landed of late.
Right on your doorstep. What about you, Reed? You're a bit of a fanatic, I've heard.
Yeah, I am. I've fished my whole life. I kind of grew up split half and half between Oregon and Ohio.
Right.
Obviously, two very different fisheries or fishing areas, but it's kind of led me to where I am today, being, in my younger years, learning to fly fish, gear fish, bait fish in Oregon for primarily trout and steelhead. But then when the family moved to Ohio, pivoted to, bass, panfish, walleye, et cetera. And so it really kind of shaped the angler that I would ultimately become. And I moved out to Colorado in 2004 to go to the University of Colorado. And,
right.
Was president of the CU Fly Fishing Club. I was a full-time fly fishing guide.
You got a lot of experience on the fly then, don't you?
Yeah. It's been since about that time, since I moved out to Colorado, I became exclusively a fly angler, and I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time around some anglers well better than me, and I've learned a lot through them, and it's been a great community to be a part of.
It's funny you should say that, because just about every angler that I've interviewed that somehow finds their way to Colorado always ends up being a fly angler ultimately in the end, because there's a huge community there, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of a Rocky Mountain mecca, for lack of a better term, just because there's it's a major metropolitan area.
Yeah.
You have lots of fly retailers and manufacturers in the area, so it's bred a very strong community. Plus, it's just a great place to be with so many different varieties of species and water types.
And there's a lot of very experienced fly anglers there, a lot of guys that really know their stuff, especially also with the carp on the fly synergy. There's a lot of really experienced anglers there. So before we move forward, I wanted to, I heard, Dan, that you are our latest American Carp Society fly member to come on board with us as well. So I wanted to thank you.
That's right.
Obviously,
oh, you're
welcome. Yeah, thank you for your support there, brother. So this relationship, for everybody listening, this relationship between the American Carp Society and Denver Trout Unlimited actually came about because Patrick from Urban Anglers USA, who I believe is a contestant in this year's Carp Slam and is a member of ours, he brought this to our attention. And so a big thank you to Patrick and a shout out for him for doing that. He mentioned the incredible work that you guys have been doing in Denver over the past few years with the rehabilitation of the Denver South Platte River. Now, that really grabbed my attention. So the first question I need to ask is, how did Denver Trout Unlimited get involved in a carp tournament?
I could take that, Dan.
We've
been putting on the tournament now for this is our 14th year.
Wow.
And it's become our true marquee event for Denver Trout Unlimited. And Sean, you asked a great question, being, you know, how does a Trout Unlimited chapter really latch on to a carp fishing tournament? You know, it 14 years ago, and it was before my time on the board, but we're fortunate enough to still have many of those board members still very active in our chapter. We were trying to find a way to raise funds to support the projects that we were committed to,
right.
But at the same time, you know, find a way to do so through something that was uniquely Denver. We knew we were, you know, it's easy in some ways to, you know, really latch onto a pristine mountain stream. But when you pivot to that, our mission statement was laser focused on the Denver South Platte, or DSP as we call it. You know, how could we find a way to reach that community and pique folks' interests with something that was very, very Denver centric, and the DSP, you know, is best known at this point as a carp fishery. So
wow.
It's kind of started off as this kind of almost tongue in cheek, kind of wacky, weird idea that sprouted legs, and the first year ended up being a huge success. And year after year, we still have many of the pros from that first year, 14 years ago, still showing up. Many of the competitors, sponsors, you know, it's just been great to see, and it's really flourished, you know, over the last, you know, decade, you know, and beyond. So we're really excited to continue it.
Yeah, it seems, and for a tournament to be running consecutively for 14 years too, obviously you said it sprouted some legs, it sprouted a lot of legs and decided to run, which is great. And it's really interesting to hear the unique angle that you guys took originally, you know, Denver and Colorado being synonymous with clean water trout and that type of thing. I think it was a great move to focus it on, you know, on the carp. I was speaking to Darrell Angler the other day on a podcast, who's been a former contestant of you guys, and he spoke incredibly highly of what you're doing. There's a lot of different species in that river, isn't there?
Sure is. It's we call it a true melting pot of a fishery, and you know, like I alluded to, you know, though we're a Trout Unlimited chapter, we celebrate the variety and diversity of our home river, and as it comes out of the Chatfield Reservoir in the southern areas of Denver, you know, it's a cold water fishery, so there's good populations of trout. And then as you get further and further downstream, you start adding in carp, smallmouth, panfish, walleye. It's a really mixed bag. So it's a really fun river, and we try and celebrate that it can no matter what your target species of choice, from a Colorado context anyway, you can find it in this river.
Yeah, and I think it's important to mention that the whole purpose of the tournament is actually for, and what you guys do, it's for rehabilitation projects on the actual river. You all of the funds go towards rehabilitating the environment in which the fish that we all know and love actually live, isn't it?
That's correct. Yeah. Every dollar that we collect as part of our fundraising activities goes to conservation and education programs that we run. And we're solely focused on the urban stretch of the Denver South Platte River. So the stretch that comes out of the Chatfield Reservoir, just upstream of Denver, as it goes through the urban stretch of downtown Denver and then out to the suburbs. 100% conservation focus.
That's phenomenal. So what kind of rehabilitation projects have you done in the past? actually on the river. What type of projects or work parties or things do you guys actually have to do there to get the river to the fishery that you want it to be?
Sure. So the first thing is that in the 60s, the South Platte River had a pretty catastrophic flood through downtown Denver. And as a result of that flood, the river was channelized and it was really managed for flood control. And so the biggest thing that happened after that was that we lost a lot of habitat that fish need to survive. So right now, there is a focus on creating habitat for all the different species of fish out there. We do everything from putting boulders into the river to something that's pretty innovative, or I think it's pretty innovative. It predates my time with Denver Trout Unlimited, but some of the board members heard of this concept from the Midwest about lunker boxes, which are wooden structures that you put on the banks of streams or rivers, and it provides cover and protection from the current or protection from predation to fish. And because this is the river is primarily managed as a flood control device, there's no way the Army Corps of Engineers would allow us to put a lot of wooden structure into the river that could become, debris in the event of a flood. And so the board of directors worked with different groups and identified that we could recycle concrete pipe and cut those pipes to provide and then mortar them into the riverbank to provide that structure that the fish needed. And so we worked with a bunch of different agencies to make that happen and anchored these concrete pipes to the riverbanks underwater, of course. And, you know, we've stuck a GoPro camera down inside there. And when you look inside there, they are full of crayfish and bait fish and fry. And, it's just great to see that the success of that idea is coming to fruition. So the first thing that we do is a lot of habitat creation. The biggest thing that we've done over the last several years is a concept called water banking, where about 3 years ago, the Army Corps of Engineers announced that they were going to expand the storage capacity of Chatfield Reservoir upstream of Denver. And as part of that, they were going to allocate some water storage for environmental use. So there's several, 100 plus days a year where Chatfield Reservoir doesn't release any water into the South Platte River through Denver. And gotcha. So the only water that comes into the river is through either storm runoff or some of the creeks that come down from the mountains. So on those no flow or low flow days, we purchased water storage rights for 10 acre feet of water in the reservoir. And on low flow or no flow days, we are going to be able to release that water into the river to provide fresh water for the fish that live downstream.
That's
been a huge focus of our fundraising for the last several years. I think the total bill came to around $75,000. And right. Just earlier this year, we raised the final amounts of money to fund that.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
That is great. And you mentioned those structures that you're putting in there. We've actually had the same experience with a lake that we manage out here in Texas, because when you can attract underwater wildlife, then you have a source of food for the fish. You mentioned crayfish, carp, they love crayfish. So you've got a great food source there. And that actually brings me to the discussion I had with Darrell Angley the other day, which really hit home. He mentioned that through the projects that you've done, he basically said it like this. He said they've created bug life in parts of the river where there was none previously. And if you don't have any bugs, you don't have any fish. So that work that you're doing is obviously affecting the food chain from the very, very beginning, all the way up to create a fishery. One of the questions I wanted to ask you guys is, if you take a section of river or a section of water, let's say that is somewhat dead, how long does it take? What is the life cycle that it takes for rehabilitating it to get it to where it's alive again and you've got bugs and you've got fish and that type of thing?
You know, our experience is unique here in Denver because we have so many regulatory agencies that we need to work with to make any changes. So from the time somebody has an idea, it moves into the design phase, and then we have to do studies and then involve the stakeholders, which the stakeholders are the Army Corps of Engineers, different federal agencies, state, city, county agencies. We have utilities and flood control districts. And then of course, we have property owners on each side of the river as well that care about what we do inside the river. Yeah. And then lastly, there's real estate developers too. So from the time we come to an idea to the time we actually make a change in the river, it can be a period of years. But once right. once we put the habitat into the river, it's, you know, in my opinion, and I'm not a scientist by any stretch, but it seems like it's fairly quick within, a couple of seasons.
Once you get past the bureaucracy that you have to go through with the red tape and are we allowed to do this and aren't we allowed to do that and so on and so forth, when you actually facilitate and get it into place, a couple of seasons can make all of that difference, you're saying, to that piece of water then.
Yeah, for sure.
The Carp Slam itself, purely a fly fishing tournament, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Can you tell us about the Pro-Am concept that you have there and explain how that works?
Sure. So you're correct. It's a pro-am team. So a single pro and a single amateur get randomly paired up in a drawing the night before the tournament day. And we thought, we'll go back 14 years. You know, the concept of fly fishing for carp was, there was kind of a core, for lack of a better term, counterculture of pros who were doing it, but
yeah.
Not as many amateur anglers were. So the idea was we could pair this amateur who is primarily, honestly, a trout angler.
Right.
We could pair them with a pro who understood how to approach these fish in this particular setting. And they could learn from it. It was almost seen as a semi-guided day. What's been really, really cool, in our opinion, over the years is the amateur pool has gotten better and better and better. And mm-hmm. and you see more and more anglers, some of which who the Denver South Platte is the only river that they fly fish on,
right.
And they only target carp.
Right.
And it's really made the tournament really exciting, especially in the last, 5 to 7 years that I've been seeing it.
Yeah.
It's been incredible to see. And in some cases, these amateurs can give the pros a run for their money.
Well, the obviously they're an incredible fish to target and they're not easy to catch on the fly. So I think it was a great concept and an idea, putting somebody who has targeted them for a few years with somebody who's just, crossing over and wanting to target them as a sport fish. And I say that, I'm not a fly angler at all, but with the amount of fly anglers that I've been fortunate enough to interview and speak to over the years, every one of them has the same comment when it comes to carp. Once they start targeting them, they find they're a lot harder to catch than they thought that they would be. And they really up your skill level as a fly angler for multi-species because they're quite spooky, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. The approach is totally different and really requires a lot of thought and technique, which is just super fun.
Are you guys seeing how many contestants can you manage actually on the tournament? How many contestants are there each year?
So we have 15 teams of a pro and am each. So there's 30 competitors in total.
Right.
And this year, I actually wanted to draw attention to that we have the most women anglers that have ever signed up. I think over a third of our field is women anglers who have come to summer repeats. And last year, actually, a woman angler won the tournament,
right,
which was really cool to see. And just another testament to that this community continues to grow, especially with organizations like the American Carp Society helping foster that community. It's just been really awesome to see and only helps our cause and attract more opportunities to raise funds for our key projects.
I agree. I think it's a great community and we've seen a great deal of fly anglers for carp, especially over the last 2 to 3 years, I must say. And I think a lot of it has got to do with Instagram use and the pictorial representation of the fish as well. There's a lot of female anglers, really good female anglers too. We're actually, we're interviewing one in the next publication, Kayla Lockhart. She and her husband, Casey Badger, they travel all over the country and did a great interview with her that will be out later on this year. But it's great to see both male and female anglers targeting the fish and taking them seriously as a sport fish, because they definitely will you know, they will test you. So have you guys got any, I wanted to ask, because I know from the American Carp Society hosting tournaments, there's a lot of organization involved. There's a lot of work that's involved. I would imagine that this year specifically in 2020, with what we, you know, with everything that's going on in the world, that it was probably quite hard in terms of logistically to put it together. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you went about that process?
Yeah, I'll start us off, and then Reed, love your insights as well. You know, when the COVID quarantine first started happening in February or March, we had a board meeting. We had a very passionate discussion about whether or not it was even appropriate to hold a tournament this year, given everything that was, you know, going on in the world. And the board was very emphatic that yes, we need to hold this tournament, and we'll figure out how to do it with, you know, we'll flex to make sure that it's safe and that we can do it successfully. And so I think we're on the right path to pulling it off. But this year has, you know, brought a number of challenges. We've had a number of different people that have helped us in offering insights into how to host it successfully. Yeah. And I'm really optimistic this year that we're going to have a very successful tournament. We were curious if people would have the appetite to donate to a cause like this in a year such as this. Mm. And we have found that, you know, people are still interested in supporting different charity organizations that, you know, resonate with their values. And so far so good on fundraising. And I'm optimistic that we're going to hit our target, and I'm optimistic that this is going to be one of the more successful tournaments that we've pulled off.
Well, we will do everything we can, obviously, to help you there, as you know, from our members. You. Yeah, as well. Reed, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I think we have repeatedly, competitors continue to just want to come out for this tournament year after year. Yeah. The field is getting more and more competitive each year, which breeds a lot of enthusiasm. And, you know, I think after the year we've all had an opportunity to bring everybody together in a safe context, celebrate for many. This is our home river. Yeah. and our target species of choice just continues to build. And, you know, a global pandemic can't stop that at that point. So Dan put it right.
I think, too, you've got a lot of people that have been stuck inside the house for the past 6 months, so probably, you know, wanting to get out.
To say the least.
Yeah.
I'll share with you an interesting observation. During the height of the quarantine here in Colorado, the you know, local governments were asking people not to travel in between cities so that, you know, in the event, so that they could contain the spread in the event that it was spreading via tourism.
Yeah.
And so driving by the river on a daily basis, I have never seen so many anglers fishing on a Tuesday at, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Three in the afternoon, yeah.
Yeah, it was remarkable. There were dozens of people fishing on the urban South Platte, and really great to see.
Well, you do have a phenomenal fishery up there. I know because of the interaction that we've got, and we have members in the area. And anglers that, you know, that travel up there. But it was really great to hear the, you know, the work that you were doing on conservation for the actual, you know, for the habitat, because we get to interact with anglers from all over the country and different organizations. And I think there's very few opportunities that we all get actually as anglers to be able to give something, you know, to give something back. And the sport does give us so very much with our time by the bank and, you know, the lessons that we get from the fish and that type of thing. So I think it's an incredible cause. Like, as I mentioned, we will do everything every year that we can to help you guys as much as possible. We're seeing a great growth in the interest of the species over here in the United States. And we've been, you know, as an organization, it goes all the way back to sort of, you know, 2002, 2003. And specifically over the past 5 to 6 years, we've seen a lot of growth. And again, I think that has a lot to do with the advent of social media and sharing the pictures of these fish. The profile of the fish has completely changed I believe, through social media, because people are taking some incredible pictures, and there's no way that you can look at some of these pictures of this species of fish and associate it with something not on the same level as any other species in the river. So I think social media has done an awful lot for it. What have you guys seen from your perspective in what you're, you know, trying to achieve there with the social media aspect?
Yeah, so it's definitely helped our cause to draw attention to you know, our means for improving the habitat of the river.
Yeah.
You know, social media can always be a little bit of a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
And I think as long as the anglers and folks out there are doing it with a sense of purpose, for lack of a better term, and mm-hmm. and but you're absolutely right. The availability of how we can share and communicate again as I keep saying, community has only improved you know, this particular area of fishing and especially in fly fishing as we can see.
Yeah, and I think at one point we were concerned that social media, there would obviously be some negatives of it, but now on the other side of that, the other side of history there, it's like any other form of communication. You're going to have good and bad, obviously. And you,
exactly.
Yeah, in any form of communication. And it has greatly helped, I believe, especially for the profile of, you know, the fish itself. One question I wanted to ask you both, and Collar, you know, Denver, where you are, is probably quite forward thinking in because of the history that you have there in regards to the fish and the association with the fish. But do you both still have, just curious to know this, you both still have friends or anglers that are fishermen, and you mention the species, and you still get pushed back a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in a Colorado setting with fly anglers who are still
traditionalist trout and salmon.
Traditional, yeah. Right, exactly. Trout fishing, single dry flies on a pristine mountain stream. That's kind of what we all think of.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. I always get a little eyebrow lift when I see my version of Saturday fishing this week will be going to the Denver South Flat behind Mile High Stadium going throughout the Metro Denver area. You know, that's my version of a good day of fishing right now. On many weekends at this point, it's you definitely still get some looks, but
I'm sure.
I encourage anybody to who is skeptical. I'm happy to fish with anybody, and as for those of us that know, carp is a heck of a lot of fun to target. Especially in this area.
And I think that's really what it comes down to, because in all of our years of doing this, we have never had a discussion with a fly angler that actually took the time and tried to target them, and usually was humbled for quite a while, which sucks them in to go, hold on, this fish is beating me. What do I have to do here? We've never spoken to a fly angler that's actually gone past, you know, the point of being incredulous and actually targeting them, that hasn't, once they know, as you mentioned, Reed, you know, once they know, then it all changes, you know, doesn't it?
There's also a population of people at the other end of the spectrum that really admire or respect or are impressed by the fact that anglers are good enough to target carp.
There you go.
It's interesting too. When I fish on the Denver South Platte River, I get lots of questions. There's some running pads and things like that along the river. And a lot of people will stop and ask me what I'm fishing for. And hey, are there really fish in there? And I say, yeah, there's carp. And they're like, you can catch carp? And I say, yeah. And they're, you know, and then when they find out that I'm fishing with a fly rod, you know, they're just amazed that you can even target a carp with a fly, because, you know, all they've ever seen is the river runs through it and Brad Pitt and Montana,
right.
You know, chasing trout.
Yeah.
And so there is that other end of the spectrum that's starting to realize that, you know, these are trophy fish and are really hard to catch.
And I think the what I call the real fishy guys, the diehard anglers, which they basically live, eat, and breathe. It's all they do, whether they're fishing for permit, whether they're fishing for trout, whether they're fishing for carp. They live, eat, and breathe it 24/7. They are, I think when a lot of anglers that haven't been introduced to it, if they look at some of the anglers that they admire and then they find out that they actually fish for them as well, I think that always helps, you know, with encouragement for them to kind of get out of their own way and, you know, and try to target one, because that's what I love to hear from every single fly angler. It's like, oh, how did you get on the first, you know, couple of sessions? And they're like, man, it was really tough. And then if you have a guide go out with them, with somebody who's a bit skeptical, they kind of see them internally kind of, you know, short circuiting when they can't catch them in the, you know, they can't approach them in the same way necessarily that they would a trout or another fish. So I love to hear those stories of our beloved fish that is obviously gaining popularity and that type of thing. And, you know, I wanted to congratulate you guys on the excellent work that you are, you know, that you're doing out there. To be involved in something that's bigger than ourselves as anglers or as human beings and as individuals, to do something that will not only give back in our lifetime, but the impact that you guys are making there will help generations of anglers in the future. What we're asking all of our members to do and listeners to help this great cause, there aren't many opportunities for us as carp anglers to get more directly involved with the future of the species than by helping with habitat rehabilitation. So this is a great cause, and together I think we can help the environment of the species that gives us so much pleasure, and also for the next generation of carp anglers. So what we would like our listeners to do, if you go to americancarpsociety.com, you will find a new tab on the website called Help the Carp. Go to americancarpsociety.com, look for the tab that says Help the Carp. Here you can donate just a few dollars, $5, $10, whatever it is that you can afford to help with the cause and be part of something that directly affects this species that we all know and love. And 100% of the money is donated go to rehabilitation of the South Platte River in Denver. Denver Trout Unlimited is also a 503c charity, and so your contributions are all tax deductions as well. Gentlemen, before we end this, do you have any final words or anything that you'd like to share?
No, I think I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. I'm really looking forward to getting engaged with the American Carp Society. The other night I was poking around on your website and saw all these resources and saw that you get a cool hat when you become a member. So it was pretty easy for me to become a member. And thank you for this opportunity to talk about what we're doing.
Of course. Thank you both. Well, that's about all we have time for today. I'd like to thank our guests, Dan Kubik and Reed Baker, for their time today explaining this very worthy cause. What's the best way, if anybody wants to reach out to you guys directly, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Through our website at denvertu.org.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this special edition of the American Carper. You can reach out to us here at the American Carp Society through Facebook and Instagram, Pinterest, and Twitter. Tag us with your captures, hashtag American Carp Society, and hashtag Join the Guilty Ones, and we will feature you on the feed. You can contact me directly with any questions at Sean@AmericanCarpSociety.com. Be lucky.